could you introduce yourself and tell me where you're from, how old you are, and describe where we are right now?
I'm Aaron Parsons from Ravenswood, West Virginia. I'm 20 years old, and we're in my lathe shop.
And could you tell me about some of the things you make here?
I make turkey calls. I pour lead to make sinkers and bullets, tan deer hides, and skin, most for fur-bearing animals.
Okay, let's start with the turkey collars. Why don't you tell me how you got into it, how you learned?
My family's been turkey hunters as long as I can remember. My grandpa is in the Turkey Hunting Hall of Fame, and it's just been a family tradition. And I've always heard stories about people making them, so I started making them when I was young out of snuff cans with slate. And it evolved into getting this lathe last year.
And I remember you said that you had found one your grandfather made.
Yeah, I found an old, it was a broom handle. He whittled down and then stuck a piece of dowel in and made a turkey call out of years ago. And it works pretty good.
And is that the only one that you know of that he made? Or?
I have no clue. I'm sure he made more, which back when the people started turkey hunting around here, that's pretty much all you could do. They didn't really sell turkey calls, so you had to make your own, or you really didn't have one. So there's some real weird ones out there that's been, like, just thought of by people.
What are some of the weirdest ones you've seen?
I've seen a lot of them made with pins and shotgun shells. It's like the turkey bone wing calls, but they take the primer out of the shotgun shell and stick the pin down in it, and it's the same thing.
Could you walk me through, so what a turkey collar is for and the process of hunting and using a collar?
You use turkey calls to get the gobblers to gobble, and then you lure them in with it. There's different calls for each time of the day. In the morning, you want to get them gobbling on the roost so you know where to start at. Then once it's daylight, you use different calls to get them to respond to you on the ground, and then so you can get close enough to actually call them in where you can get a shot on them.
Huh. And is there a difference, like, in how they make sounds?
Yeah, it's just, there's a lot of the same, like, sounds, just different pitches, and the rhythm of, like, the yelp will change from time to time throughout the day.
So what's the type of collar you use in the morning?
I either use this called a hoot owl call, which I don't know if I have one up here. It sounds like a hoot owl. And turkeys do a thing called shot gobble, where certain sounds will just make them gobble. Thunder does it. Owls will do it. Sometimes if you, like, slam a car door, they'll just gobble for whatever reason. And that works really good in the morning time when they're still up in the trees before it's light.
And then afternoon.
Afternoon, it's... That's right about the time it starts slowing down throughout the day. Because at noon's about when hens go back to their nest. Because during turkey season, that's when hens are laying their eggs. And so, the best thing to do is just sparse calls throughout the day. Let them know, if they're close, to know that there is a hen there. So that if, because normally they're with hens by that point. So when they're done there, they can go to their next hen, which would be you.
So you're trying to mimic a hen call.
Yeah, you're trying to make them think there's a hen out there looking for a gobbler.
So why don't you get out your collars and show me some of the different varieties you've made. How did you teach yourself how to do this?
I blew up a lot of calls at first on this thing.
What do you mean?
Well, it spins real quick, and if you do it wrong, then the wood will actually crack, and then as it cracks, it just comes apart, and chunks get flying. And it's kind of sketchy the first few times. But when I first started, right there's what I was making. It's a snuff can. I don't have anything to knock it out with. But all I did was, I didn't have no way to cut slate back in, so I had to cut it with a file and a pair of scissors, and a hacksaw, and it took about 3 days to cut one piece of slate. Then I'll just put stilts in the snuff can, and it took forever to get the right size. And you just slide it down in there, and that's a call.
Wow.
Super simple, but it worked. That's what I called my first turkey I ever with, was one of those.
Wow.
By myself.
And then what do you scrape across it?
It's called a striker. Here's one. Oh, I have a better one down there I should have got, but that's one I carved by hand before I had a lathe. And it, same thing, it takes about, it took about 5 days to make this one because it's real hardwood.
Hmm.
But it's just a lot easier with a lathe. But when you're doing everything by hand, it turns out cool looking because there's little imperfections everywhere and I like it.
Mm-hmm.
But by lathe, it's so much easier to make them just perfect.
Yeah. What kind of wood is that?
This is a white oak. It was actually a piece of firewood I kind of borrowed and made a striker out of.
You want to do the call?
That's called a yelp. Then you got clucks. And purrs. Turkeys make all kinds of noises. So you just gotta try them all, I guess, sometimes.
And would you do that sort of thing at what time of day?
That's after they get off roost up to about, I don't know, 10 o'clock. You want to keep calling and keep calling to get to a gobbler before it gets to another hen.
Got it.
Because once they get with hens, and they just kind of hang out together the rest of the evening, or rest of the morning. So you want to do a lot of calls, quick calls, in that period to try to get them to come to you first. Because then after that, you have to wait till after 11 o'clock, because you can't hunt after 12 for turkeys. But, yeah, that's... And when they're, yeah. You just do that.
So you really have to learn a lot about turkeys.
You have to watch somebody do it before you actually get decent at it. I watched my dad do it for years. Before I finally started hunting on my own. It's one thing you gotta be around to learn how to do it.
You wanna show some others?
Yeah. This right here is, this one. This is the first call I ever made by myself on this lathe. That actually turned out to be a call instead of shrapnel. And well, that was, no, that's the first striker ever made. It's both walnut that we had cut up here, and the guy brought the sawmill here and he cut it out and everything. So all this is from right here on this land. And so this slate, that's red slate, which I think it'll be right here. You don't really see these common as a gray slate, but I really like it.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
But,
And that, so that you found on the land too?
Yeah. This is old shingles from an old house that somebody tore down however long ago. But this is real hard wood, so it's like a raspier sound.
Oh. Like, that doesn't sound like a call.
Sorry about that.
I'm sorry.
But the softer the wood, the more mellow of a call you can get. But these real hardwoods, you get that real raspy, scrapey sound. And what do I have in here? I think this is a real soft wood. It's got the Yes, that's that.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's oak. This one here, I think that's cherry. It's they're all wood has a different sound just because it slides across the different. I have one here. This one. That was carved from pine. I laid it down, but it was too soft and it wouldn't even make any sound at all, so I had to take a lighter and fire harden the tip a little bit. So it's real hard now. It's,
oh, yeah.
It's real loud, but it's high pitch. And then I took tie-dye out of a, like, from tie-dye and shirts.
Uh-huh.
And soaked it and turned it green and I liked it. I was going to try it and it was a perfect one to try it on.
Cool.
But,
So when you go out hunting, how many are you just bringing one with you, or what are you bringing with you?
I normally bring only one call, one actual call itself, but I'll bring 3 or 4 or 5 strikers, just for each one's louder and quieter. Some have better sound, but aren't quite as loud as these ones. Uh-huh. And different times, like, because where turkey season starts right at the beginning of spring. So in the first week of turkey season in the fall or spring, there's no lease really. So sound will travel real far. But as you get later on in the season, lease start coming and it'll muffle the sound. So you got to get a little louder calls to actually reach out to the gobblers wherever they'll be at. And you just got to go with it more or less, depending on the situation.
And so this, like, the way you're shaping them with the carved lines, yeah. Is that something you came up with?
It's just something I like. I just like having the lines on there. They just look plain without it to me. So I'll just do a bunch of random lines on there.
That's nice.
But,
And then the curve of the...
Yeah, that's just a personal thing I like. I like it having that arch. I just think it looks better like that, which I started on one here. I gotta finish it. But it's got all kinds of... It's gonna be from there to there. It's gonna be real long, about this long.
Wow.
It'll slope down and then have that little thin part.
That's beautiful.
I ain't finished it yet.
It's like a fine chair leg or something.
Yeah, that's what my buddy said.
And are you spinning that on the...
Yeah, on the lathe. I got the thing off now. Where I put it. This goes on this side.
Uh-huh.
And you have to carve an X on the top and bottom of the thing. And you gotta put that on there. And you tighten this thing down, and it'll actually push it in a little bit. And suck it down in there real tight. Then this side's got that big motor, and it'll spin it real quick. And that's normally what I use for strikers. I use this one. You just slide your tool back and forth across there until you get it where you want it.
Do you people sell collars?
I have never sold a call. I've gave a lot away to like family members and stuff, but I ain't sold any yet. I probably should, but that takes some of the fun out of it. When it's a job instead of just kind of a hobby.
Totally, yeah. So most people are making their own, or they're like getting them from...
Now there's a decent sized market for turkey collars. Companies are actually making it. Because back in the 80s, there wasn't that many turkeys around here. So there wasn't a massive sport. But that's when people were making their own and trying new stuff, and it was like an innovative time for turkey hunting. And then as time went on, turkeys got more plentiful here because of management, and companies started producing all kinds of calls, and now more or less you just go buy one.
Mm.
Gonna make one.
And the company, the manufactured ones, are they hand carved at all, or what are they made out of?
I have no clue. A lot of them are plastic and glass, and they have all kinds of weird stuff. It's hard to find a wooden slate call store-bought anymore.
Hmm. And is there, like, what are some resources that you go to for this sort of thing? Learning to make calls and...
I don't know where you'd go to look at it.
Did you go on YouTube at all, or...?
I've seen calls my whole life and been around them. Where my whole family's been hardcore in hunting. And I just kind of had an idea what I wanted to do with it, and kind of just started doing all kinds of random things, and it turned out not half bad, some of them at least. Some of them kind of ugly.
I think they're all pretty cool. So the corn cob one is pretty neat.
Yeah, that's back in when they first started making them. That right there is what a lot of people did. Because they're real light, so you can do real quick clucks and all kinds of stuff, but they're still got enough weight to actually make a good sound. That's a lot of them were like that back in the day.
And you made that one too?
Yeah.
What kind of wood is that?
I think it's white oak, too. Okay. Real hard wood. That's why it's sort of screechy. I have one. This one? It's Osage Orange, which I don't think...
Oh, wow.
I don't know if I have any sandpaper. I'll show you. It's actually orange wood. Once you get it all sanded out, but it's been used so much, it's all smeared over, more or less. But it's a real bright, like, yellow-orange looking wood. It's real cool looking.
Wow. Do anything with the... Like the fruit?
Not really. There's only, I think, one anywhere near here, and it's way back that way.
Got it. And then, so some of the other things you do, could you talk about, how you learned to trap and sort of what are the processes when you get an animal in the trap?
Nobody's ever really trapped that I've known. So when I wanted to trap, just because I seen old movies and it looked like it'd be fun. So I got a couple books and read on them and tried to learn as much as I could. And it took about 5 years to get everything I needed and all the knowledge I thought I'd need to start trapping. Because my great-grandpa used to trap. But he died when I was 7, I think. And he wasn't trapping anytime I was alive. But he had traps. I got them hanging up there. They're old traps. They've been sitting there 20, 25 years. And so I went ahead and talked to people saying I used them when I wanted to. So I got them. And you have to boil them. Because the smell of metal, like coyotes and stuff, they can smell the steel. So you got to bury them in ash for like a month to get a nice even coat of the rust. See where these are starting to get them pits. I haven't buried these yet. But it'll give a nice even coat of rust for the dye to stick on. Then you boil them, and it's called wood dye, I think. And it gets rid of a lot of the scent, and it'll give them a nice even color. And then after that, you have to, it's called waxing them. You put wax on top of the water you're boiling them on. And as you pull it through, it'll coat it all in wax, and that helps conceal the scent a little bit more. And then you can't touch it with your bare hands, because then you just ruin everything you spend all the time doing. So you gotta wear rubber or leather gloves to handle them after, from that point on. And what I do is I have a basket and I put pine boughs in it. So it has a little bit of pine scent, so it's even a little more to conceal human scent on it. And then more or less you just go find I go up that way, go find an old trail. And they call it lure, but it's just scent. It's different kinds of urine, okay. Different animals. What you do is you dig a hole and you set your trap in there. I don't think I'm up here, but there's these little, it's like mesh screens you put over top where the actual pan goes here. So that way dirt won't get down in here and all this stuff can still move.
Okay.
Because if it gets, it can actually seize it up before it gets to the animal's foot, and then the animal will just pull out, which I had that happen a couple of times. Yeah. It's not fun. Because you get up there and all you see is a trap laying on top of the ground and no animal. But you do all that, you dig a hole at a 45 degree angle. I use this filler here, it used to have a handle on it. You just dig down, you pour some scent down the hole, and you want to get it just about right. You want to use trees to your advantage and brush and anything you can to get the animal placed the way you want it. So you can set the trap here where its foot's going to be, so when it's down sniffing the hole where the scent is, there's no way it could get to it without stepping in the trap. And every day you have to run your entire trap line. I do it every morning. You start, do the whole thing, come back. And you have an animal, you just shoot it. And I bring it back here and skin it. Then after you have it skinned, I got a flesh board, it's outside. When the skin's still soft and supple, you fold it over it. Then you use, where'd it go? This thing. It's called a flushing knife. The board is actually about this big around. It's curved. You just slide this down it, and it'll take all the fat and the muscle and everything that's not what you want on there off. And after that point, you stick it on that big metal wire thing. It's a stretcher, and it'll flatten it out because it'll be skin out, so the fur will be in there together. You flatten it out. Then you hook these to the that one to the back legs and this one to the tail to keep it pulled tight so it'll actually stretch it out a little bit. Uh-huh. That's where they get these funny looking, like the shape to them comes from that.
Okay, yeah.
When they're all stretched out, but holds them like that, leave them on there a while. And a lot of times, that's all, when people sell hides, that's all you gotta do. You take them and you sell them. But where I don't really sell them, I just keep them. While they're on there, after they're dry, I'll mix up a batter, I guess you could call it, of mayonnaise, eggs, and I think vegetable oil is what it was. You slather it on there, let it set in for a day, wipe it all off. Then you put it back on, let it set for 2 days, and wipe it back off, and it'll go in there. All the bacteria that'll eat the root hairs out, so that the hair will fall out. It kills all the bacteria, so you get this nice white-looking skin. And it sets, this stuff also will set the hair into the skin.
Okay.
Kind of like cements it in.
Uh-huh.
So that you don't have to worry about it falling out.
So if you wouldn't do that, the hair
might fall. Hair just, it's that's why there's hair in here. Everywhere.
So, and you're putting the mayonnaise mixture on the inside, like the skin side, right?
Yeah, all over the skin. It'll be on the outside. Slather it down. And it also makes it real supple. Because if not, then it's just real brittle and hard. Like, I didn't get the legs all that good. And they're pretty stiff. And you can see the head. I didn't get it because it was tucked in like that.
And what do you do with everything else? The fat, the muscle, the guts?
Most of it you can't use because it's canines. You can't really eat them or nothing. Possums, you really can't, but I guess if you're desperate, you could eat it, but I just take it back to the woods.
Yeah. Do you bury it?
Nah. Something will eat it.
Yeah. And where do you get your scent from?
Buy it at a store.
So is it real urine, or?
Yeah. It's gray fox urine, coyote urine, and bobcat urine. That's what I use now.
How do people collect that?
I have no clue. I don't want that job very much. It's just potent.
So a coyote is drawn towards bobcat urine?
The curiosity thing is a big part of it, I'd say. Because they're all super territorial animals. And if it wants to know what this is doing in its territory, all that good stuff.
And how did you learn this?
Learn about
the tanning aspect of it.
Same thing. I think a magazine actually is where. No, it was a book. I read Gary Paulson books, and they're talking about tanning hides and making a whole bunch of stuff. And I researched it a little bit on the internet and got a couple books and tried it on my brother's ex-wife's first deer, and it worked. So I tried it on my girlfriend's first deer, and it worked then too. So I started doing small game.
Was it Hatchet, the
book? No, it was called, what was it? Mr. Tuckett, I think. One of them book series.
I think I read that one.
It did about the 1800s, Morgan Trail time.
Cool. And what was the other thing you said you do?
I make sinkers and bullets. I have same as that book. That book talks about having a 45 Hawken muzzleloader. I have one of them, and I got everything to make the bullets for it. These are sinker molds. For catfishing.
They're
2 ounce, 3 ounce, all the way down to like 1/8 ounce, small little egg sinkers. And I got all kinds of molds. This is the first one I got, and after that I started buying a bunch. Just because it's kind of fun. And, I got split shot. Another little mini, a lot smaller sinkers. But, my grandpa used to do it back, before I was alive. I think these two were actually his. He poured lead. That's where I got a lot of my lead casting stuff from. Worked for a phone company, and when they pulled up all their old phone lines or lead case, and replaced it with a plastic case. He just kept a bunch of lead. So he had a whole bunch of lead, and I ingotized it. When I went to college for welding.
What does ingotize mean?
Take it from just a big chunk of lead with wire stuck in it. Pulled it all off, melted it down, poured in these, and it made little ingots, like gold ingots, but they're lead. But I have probably 100 pounds of that stuff saved now. But it's a lot easier to deal with. Well, you don't have to worry about all the trash in there. Because when you pour it and you melt it all down, there's a layer on top of all the dirt and the rust and all the stuff you don't want in it. You just scrape it off. And then when you pour it in there, you got good clean lead instead of having that dirty lead from the old fin lines. But, made bullets for a muzzleloader and actually went hunting with it last year for the first time.
How'd it go?
Didn't shoot nothing, but I've shot a lot of bullets out of it since then. Hmm. It's a fun gun. Old muzzleloader, side lock. Built my grandpa's. He is old, 60s, I think, is when it was made. But it shoots amazing for how old it is.
And what do you, what do you hunt with
it? It's a deer. Okay. Deer muzzleloader. But I guess you can hunt anything you want with it.
And do you catfish?
Yes.
Where do you go for that?
We're up right here. There's a big dam called the Belleville Dam. I fish down there a lot. I used to, at least last year. But I didn't really get too much this year where I work so much.
And so you use your own sinkers for that?
Yeah.
They work okay?
Yeah. Do about all you want a sinker to do.
Yeah. Sink. Where are you setting your sights on other, projects or skills?
I'm sure I will. It just kind of, I see something and I want to try it, then I end up starting into it, and then I just get way overboard with it, and that's like the only thing I'll do for like a year, and then the next year, same thing. It's been like ever since I was little.
It's a good way to build skills, though.
Yeah.
Your mom was saying she was coaching archery. Are you a bow hunter too?
Yes. I've had a bow as long as I can remember. When I was, I think, 7th grade, I got my first real hunting bow. And, that's the third time I ever took a hunt. I got for my first buck with a bow, and it was third biggest buck now, but at the time it was the biggest buck I ever killed in my life. And that right there was, it's different than gun hunting. It's hard to explain, but when you shoot an arrow at an actual animal, it's like slow motion. Your heart, you just feel everything. You watch it go. It's way different. It's a lot more of an adrenaline rush.
Do you prefer that?
I do, but I don't. I mean, it's a lot funner, but I don't know. A lot of times you'll get mad because you can shoot 50, 60 yards with a bow. With a gun, if you can see it, more or less you can hit it around here. But when they just hang out there at 70 yards, just watch you all day, then they just walk off, that'll bug you.
Do you have to be... Is it harder to kill something with a bow?
It's harder to shoot a bow just because there's more into it. You have to be... Harder to shoot a bow than a gun, because gun you just put on your shoulder shoot. Bow you have to have your hand right, and it's just especially the yardage thing is one of the hardest parts. Is as it arches, you have to know different yardages, and you have to, I got a rangefinder, guesstimate where the deer is compared to where you know your bow hits at certain yardages, and try to get it where it needs to be.
You said you took a class on welding?
Yeah.
What do you still do that?
No, I went to college for welding for a year and got a lot of new skills. Because that's what I was going to do, but I'm not getting around with it. But I went to school at first when I was in high school. I took a 2-year class in auto body to fix collision repair. Just to fix cars that have been in wrecks and stuff. Got out of that, I went to go be a welder. When I was in school, I was kind of wanting to just build cars, like hot rods for a living. But that's not really a thing around here. You have to be in bigger cities for that to actually work out. But,
yeah. So what do you do for work?
I work at a stamping mill. I don't make car parts.
Car parts?
Yeah, for car parts.
Parts. Mm-hmm.
The inner part of like airbags and parts of bearings and all kinds of stuff like that. Just stamp it out. Big old presses.
Uh-huh. Nice. Well, maybe I'll take some photos of the collars. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Nothing I can think of.
Do you have, other than your parents, are there other mentors you have that show you stuff or you go hunting with? That sort of thing?
A lot of our family hunts together, like my uncles. Every muzzleloader season, we all get together and hunt together, do drives and stuff. But other than that, not really.
I had another question. Are there other people around here that you could think of that I should talk to that, you know, make traditional crafts or related to hunting, like taxidermists or, you know, anything like that, woodworkers?
Well, Gary Singleton, he's big into woodworking. I'm trying to think of anybody else. Other than that, I really don't know. I don't know anybody that really has a lathe besides that does this. I know some people got lathes and make bowls and do that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. There's a few people that make turkey calls. I talked to one guy at Arts and Crafts Fair at Cedar Lakes a couple years ago. He did the same thing. He laid them down. But I ain't really seen him since then. Because he was there 2 years in a row and I talked to him. But after that, I ain't seen him. Hmm.
Yeah, you could probably get into some fine furniture building based on that. That actually, collar.
That thing there is called a copy crafter. You've mounted on here somehow. I ain't really messed with it any yet or no, but you make something like a table leg, and then you put that table leg on that thing somehow. I still got to read it on it. And what it does is it mimics it. So you have identical, it runs one thing down it and then runs the knife the same.
Oh, wow.
So you'll have two identical things and you need to do that over and over. So you have four table legs that are the same instead of being a little different.
Yeah, you could make, or like, stair railing.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Yeah. But I ain't really mess with it too much because all these are different.
Cool. Well, thanks very much.
No problem.